In this week's episode of Timey-Wimey TV, Liz and Rudy discuss the Doctor Who installment, Curse of the Black Spot, chat about ratings drama at the BBC, and reflect on Fringe, a show that just joined the Time Travel Club. Hello, hooray!
Welcome back to Timey-Wimey TV. I'm Rudy Deshan, at Rudy on Twitter.
I'm Liz Miller, at Lizlet on Twitter. And we've got a special guest, Zatanna the Cat, who does not have a Twitter handle because I'm not that kind of cat person. Yet.
Yet. We'll give it time. And welcome to Timey-Wimey TV, our internet podcast in love with all things Who and general sci-fi time travel. In fact, today I think we might expand our horizons a bit.
Yeah. I mean, let's be really clear. We started this podcast literally so we would have an excuse every week to talk about time travel television for an hour. And so far, it's been really successful in that regard.
Yeah. Thanks for everyone who keeps following us, subscribing to us. Want to give a bit of a shout out to all those wonderful people.
Yeah.
The web site, we have Jeff Dangershoes, Elwells, I think that's how you pronounce his last name. Nick Slayton, again, gave us a wonderful comment. And Stephen Evil Keevil.
Yes, he's the one who provides you with the pronunciation guide. He is the professional here.
It's true. And in fact, I think I want to give him an honorary status as our UK reporter on the street as he fills us on what's happening on the other side of the pond. In fact, I think this week again we saw the Amy Pond narrative recap at the beginning of the episode. I'd be curious to know, again, if it showed across the waters.
Did it show at the beginning of episode 2, though? Because I don't think it did.
It didn't show on that beginning of episode 2. So.
That's weird. I guess they prioritized the previously on. I actually watched the episode through an iTunes download.
Wow.
I paid money because I only had my iPad with me this weekend, and I have yet to figure out how to, you know, without any other device with me, it was iTunes or anything, nothing.
I guess that's the real sign of love here, that if anyone doubts it, we're willing to pay for Who.
I paid money. Cash dollars.
And who else do we have to give thanks to?
Well, off the Twitters, we had some lovely comments this week. Kate Klo gave us a very nice recommendation to her followers. And a weaker one, Weaker One, you're going to have to tell me if it's Weaker or Wecker One, because it's W-E-K-E-R One.
Weaker.
Yes, and so I don't want to imply that you're weaker. I'm sure you're very strong and masculine. But he had an interesting question for us that we will actually be addressing later in the show. So look forward to that. And speaking of shows, you want to start talking about this week's episode?
Let's talk about this week's episode. I believe we promised that this week I'd be doing the spoilers announcement.
Yes, but you have a special voice to do it in.
Well, it's a pirate show, so better way to say spoilers.
Yay! That was delightful.
So this week's episode began in the middle
of... Oh, hold on. To clarify, this is the episode Curse of the Black Pearl, which is an episode of this TV show called Doctor Who. Maybe you've heard of it.
Wait, these things have titles?
They do. The titles are important, and we will get to that when we talk about speculation for next week, BT Dubs.
That's true. So, Curse of the Black Pearl.
Arr.
Pearl.
Pearl.
Wait, no, Curse of the Black Spot.
Oh, was it?
Curse of the Black Pearl. Yeah, you're right. This is the post-Pirates of the Caribbean world we work in.
So, everything was Johnny Depp's fault. We take full responsibility. Curse of the Black Spot.
So sad.
Our apologies.
But anyway, episode began on a ship in the middle of a becalmed sea where one pirate cuts himself, the others all freak out, lock the doors, and suddenly you hear horrible screaming on the outside where that pirate is. They go out and look for him, and then boom, the doctor's in the hold of the ship with his companions. Hurrah! And we begin with the Doctor Who song going on. Turns out that anyone who gets a cut on the ship gets taken away by a magical siren. They can't resist her sea singing. And antics ensue on the ship whereby, looks like everybody gets cut at some point. And it's revealed that the siren is actually some sort of medical hologram. I love this Voyager crossover that happened where it's a medical holodeck program that has been curing people.
Yeah.
And just ultimately it is that the doctor, basically gets his companions back and they go off on their journey. And meanwhile, the pirates who are all snatched away, they get to basically roam the high seas of space.
Yes. And so what's essentially, it seems, the big twist is that there's a spaceship from presumably the far off future that has somehow gotten interlocked with the pirate ship. And it's one of those things that doesn't quite get explained, which clearly means that it's a big part of, I feel like at this point with Moffat, you're just like, oh, if he didn't explain it in this episode, well, clearly it's a big part of the overall series arc.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about episode, because like that's your feeling. I just think this is a typical filler episode.
It's
like, oh, is this fantastical? No, it's science. But the wavy type of science.
Yeah, I actually felt like, I was surprised that there wasn't more genuine, like, oh, don't you see the siren isn't a siren, a magical creature, she's an alien. No, an alien creation. Like, I was surprised that they didn't go further with that. Then again, that's kind of done territory for them. I think the big bullet points were that, first off, I want to say Hugh Bonneville as the captain of the ship was extraordinary. And I recently consumed all of Downton Abbey, and which is this lovely, British period drama that was on, I think it was ITV. Last fall, and then PBS picked it up, and then it's on the Netflix now, and you should all watch it because it is wonderful, and Hugh Bonneville shows his range in from that, where he's playing the stately manor lord of a manor, and in this he is playing a truly pirate-like pirate.
I actually found him a good pirate because he didn't overplay the piracy. It's so easy to go crazy. I mean, but then again, I also felt they didn't really explain the piracy here. It was just like, these guys are pirates. Anyway, he's all about pirates. Let's carry on.
He steals stuff.
Yeah.
And that's like the big thing, is essentially, because it was actually interesting because I was watching the episode and I was like, this is kind of weird. And I feel like there's like a beat coming, because the story didn't feel very fleshed out. It was like pirates on a pirate ship. There's no emotional core to that story. And then they reveal that the captain's son is stowed away on the ship. Yes. And
I
then
completely
it's like
bulldozed past that one with this week's recap.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that you have done an excellent job of doing recaps that are actually quick new nimble recaps of the episode, as opposed to our rambling whatevers. So anyways, the important point is that so we have the son show up, and then so it's basically, captain pirate captain and his son at the end cruising around in space with their pirate buddies.
Which, by the way, I thought was a delightful ending to it. I actually liked that. And see, whereas you might think that, oh, he's going to explain that later, it's all going to tie back, the whole how did the ship get here?
Yeah.
I actually think the opposite. I think that it was just like, oh, I don't even think the ship's in the future. I think it's just the ship that was there.
It's just an alien spaceship.
An alien spaceship. They just got caught or something along those lines. Maybe it's related to how to get caught was like the weird dimensionality of it. But what I thought, what we're going to see, if it's anything like past Who, is that somehow these pirates are going to show up at a later point. Either we're going to see them, the exact same pirates coming in there, like the doctor's, ace up his sleeve, or it might be like Toby, the young pirate's son, who can't leave the ship, he grows up on there, he'll return himself much older, or we'll see a fleet of these guys, or something. You have the sense that these pirates are off on an adventure, and if they don't, I'll be honest, I'll be terribly disappointed. I think it's like just this kind of, it would truly confirm this episode as a pure filler episode.
Yes, and the thing, and to Stephen Moffat's run on Doctor Who's credit, there really aren't a lot of episodes, you can't really say that there's any episode of the last two seasons that's been pure filler.
I don't know. I think there would have been some filler.
Well,
episodes.
I mean, last season there were episodes that felt like filler, and then they all tied together.
Yeah, well, I'll say that what was the one with the giant space whale?
No, but Dawn introduced Liz 10, who A, was awesome, and B, was a key part in, like, bringing, you know, all the pieces together at the end of the season.
You mean that 1 5-second scene?
Shut up. Liz 10 is awesome.
Liz 10 is awesome.
Yes. And
I hope we see more of Liz 10.
No, I think that episode is... That episode, actually, I thought... I can't hear anything negative against The Beast Below, because I was so tentative about Matt Smith initially, and that was the episode that sold me on him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like... It made me cry. I cried at the end of that episode because it was just like, it was such a, because I think what that episode does really nicely is it sets up Moffat's take on the Doctor. Like the concept of someone who's very old.
I'm like, let's get into this because again, the pirate one was so filler. I'm like, this sounds more interesting. So yeah. how is this was his take? Why do you feel that was the
well, take I think it? he says it flat out. Basically, Amy figures out flat out who the Doctor is, who's someone very old and very kind who can't hear children cry.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you know, that doesn't quite get into the, you know, other side of the Doctor, the darker side, but it does hit really nicely on. It does hit really nicely on why he acts the way he does.
It does.
Sorry.
I think maybe you're right in that regard. It helped to find that out. Whereas I found it was the episodes right after that that really got the Doctor. I felt that one was a bit of a throwback to like it felt very much like a RTD episode, like Stevens. Version of an RTD episode just to ease people in, and then I found stuff like I'm terrible with titles.
Victory of the Daleks.
No, well, Victory of the Daleks. That was probably the one for me that got to it, where he's not the kind of swashbuckling in your face that David Tennant was. He's more of the like slightly goofy, he's more of a sly fox than the Tennant version.
Right.
He's more of a. He's look how silly I am, and meanwhile he's actually setting you up for something.
Yeah.
Like the whole, you know,
Dodgers.
The Jammy Dodgers is actually like the device he's gonna kill everything with. He really doesn't even have a plan after that, but it's enough to hold them off. So it was Victory of the Dogs is pretty good, and then with the Angels again was excellent. River Song came back into it, which I thought set the tone for it. And the whole like actually I never cried Who. With the exception of the Van Gogh episode, but
that's because you have a heart and you're human. Though I know people who, I feel like the Van Gogh episode is one of those really polarizing ones for people. Like
seriously,
I know people who strongly hate it, but you know,
really,
yes, I liked it a lot, but I also you know it's like meanwhile I strongly hate the lizard episodes.
You wonder how much I love that episode.
Which one?
The Van Gogh episode.
How much?
I applied for a credit card, and you had to pick your background for it.
Aww.
And all of the ones there was just pictures of, like, eagles and freaking American flags. I love America, but I don't need an American flag to show it. And, you know, of course, the boring background. And then I was like, oh, look, Starry Night. Oh, this allows me to both be geeky and actually not have to pay extra for a custom background. This is excellent. That's how much I love the Van Gogh episode. But I was going to say, though, apart from the Van Gogh episode, like, being the one that actually emotionally moved me, I mean, like, to the point I was like, you know, something in my eye, the two-part Angel episode last season, that one was actually excellent as well in, especially when the Doctor comes back. And a famous scene where he has his coat off and that off and all that. God. But that was like, one, that defined the kind of Doctor for me, but two, that enduring thing where he does... At the main core of it, he actually understands people, though sometimes people don't understand him. And you know, you see, like, as much as he's being silly, he does genuinely care. He's like that, like, where he's kind of giving this kind of, like, lecturing moment, but it's very sweet and touching. And I know for Casey, she broke down and cried when she saw that one, that part. She's like, he's so good. That was probably the episode that made her fall in love with it more than anything else.
Wow.
I'm talking on her behalf, so, which is often wrong.
Yeah, well, let's go back to, going back to this episode, I mean...
The pirates,
because, I mean, I think the biggest criticism we have of it is that it's not, it aside from key bits, such as we got another appearance of Eyepatch Lady.
Yes.
Who, by the way...
Cyber eye patch lady. And you noticed something about her, or you've noticed someone else noticing something about her.
I thanks to the Tumblrs, and I'll include a link to this in the blog post so you can check it out for yourself. The actress who plays Cyber eye patch lady is also seen in Victory of the Daleks. I haven't gone back and rewatched the episode to see if she has any lines or she's important in any way, but...
I think she did have some lines, but I don't know if they're going to tie her in that strongly to it.
Yeah, I mean, this could be an Adeola Jones, Martha Jones situation. And hey, fans, if I don't have to explain that to you, awesome, because that'll take some time. But if it's a situation like that, if we're talking Adeola Jones versus Martha Jones, awesome. But I'm fine with that. But it'll be very interesting if they try to tie it all together very neatly.
I expect they do. Like, it would be cool if they did. I mean, we've already seen signs of this. The fact that the silence was something that was mentioned in the first season. In fact, on the very first episode. And we only actually meet them this first episode of this season.
Right.
So that's intriguing, to say the least. Mm-hmm. So I would not be surprised. I also would, like you said, I would not be disappointed. Mm-hmm. If it was, it turns out just we hired the same actor. Great.
Yeah. And... so I enjoy that. So that we have another reappearance of that. So clearly that's being built up as a much bigger thing. And I forget what she said this time. It's a stay calm. You're doing very well.
Something like that.
So this is, it's...
stay calm and carry on.
Yes. It's very British sentiment. And then we also have at the very end, the reminders of the two ongoing themes of the season, which are that Amy's got her Schrodinger pregnancy. I'm not talking very clearly tonight, and I apologize for that. Amy's Schrodinger pregnancy.
Schrodinger's pregnancy.
Schrodinger's pregnancy. Unlike
Schrodinger's cat, which is behind you.
She's ignoring us. She's decided that she...
The question is she ignoring you when you're not looking at her? That's the Schrodinger cat.
Yes. No, she's... No, I think really the situation is she's an Eccleston fan. She doesn't care for this new malarkey. But the other, you know, we have the pregnancy thing I can't apparently say tonight, and we also have the reminder that we totally saw the doctor die in the first episode.
That's the thing. It felt like, hey, pirates having fun. Aren't we being clever with the siren legend? Oh, by the way, don't forget there's a real plot line this season.
Yeah,
and it doesn't tie anything we just saw. Not tied into it in the least.
But then again, when in episode 7 the pirates and their spaceship coming swooping by like the Millennium Falcon to save the day, we're not going to be complaining too much.
Yes. Wait, have you heard? Have you seen spoilers that's what's actually?
No, I'm just. I mean, I just like to reference Millennium Falcon whenever possible. And I think, yeah, I mean, it was a fine episode. They did a nice job finding a nice pirate ship to shoot it on.
It was a very typical Doctor Who episode.
Yeah.
Not. I mean, or should I say very classic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be like, not my favorite. Not that I actually don't think it's a good... I actually don't think it's that good of an episode. I think it's just a paint by the numbers. Oh, we have to wait until something else. No disrespect to the writers. I mean, mm-hmm. they yeah. As I said, it didn't dazzle me. It didn't wow me. It didn't... I don't think anything was truly bad. It's just as a result of everything else going on, it felt like filler.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows, we might all be surprised in the end.
Yes.
And one, I guess I think the one last thing to say about it is that, you know, it just feels like it was it was this. Because it felt like a typical episode after the two-part extravaganza in America, did you notice it felt very much like, hey, so we blew the budget, and let's go back to British basics for shooting on this thing?
I think we talked about that like in the first episode of our podcast, where it was like we told ourselves, brace yourself for the episode that takes place entirely in the TARDIS. And instead we got the episode that takes entirely on a standing pirate ship set.
And to be fair, there was also on the hospital bed, but that's the thing, I was like, oh, look at this simple set design for this thing.
They did not shell out. I'm going to also take this moment to share my last thought on it, and this is a totally nitpicky, annoying thought, is that I swear to God, I don't know why this is the case, because there's plenty of actual information on how to properly give CPR out there, but to date, I think I maybe have seen once a scene where someone accurately and effectively gives CPR. Like, it's here, let's go, guys. It's 15 pumps to the chest, check the airway, tilt the head back, 15 pumps to the chest, 2 breaths, plug the nose, god damn it, so that the air actually goes into the lungs, 15 presses again, to the beat of staying alive. It's not that hard to do this accurately. Anyone with basic first aid training knows how to give CPR. I am so sick and tired of seeing it done badly.
I don't know where to respond to that. I'm like, either want to call you a CPR nerd or add a legal disclaimer to the show right now saying we're not liable if you take this and manage to go with, lose someone's life in the process.
Look, you're better off using, I mean, yes, we are legally not liable if you take my advice and try to give CPR, but I'm just saying taking my advice over Doctor Who's, you're going to be much better off in just this one case. No other case will this be true. Doctor Who will always be smarter than me, but on the CPR thing, I feel pretty confident that I'm right.
Actually, here's the funniest thing. It was not the doctor who told him what to do. It was Rory, the nurse.
Yeah, well, Rory gave back. I mean, I don't know. Like, I thought actually that was something that really struck me as interesting was that, you know, the doctor is, you know, just kind of standing by with his giant, with his own alien spaceship full of magical alien technology. Like, he's just, like, letting Amy perform basic 20th century first aid to save his life. And, you know, that could just be a weird moment of writing where they're like, oh, Amy has to do it. It has to be Amy's moment, or Amy's big moment of heroism. But
So that's funny you said that, because Io9 noticed that and pointed out that Io9, on this review of the show, talked about the fact that this is the first time Amy actually has saved Rory, where previously Rory always dies, you know, like
does keep dying.
Rory keeps dying in this case. I mean, technically, he even died for a couple minutes there, or a minute.
Yeah.
But the point is that every time she tries to save him, she can't. She can't remember him. She can't do anything. He's the one who always saves her. It's the first time where it's actually mutual in some regard. And I mean, maybe some, if you want to, I don't believe this, but some people might say, well, maybe the doctor let her save him, you know, before he waved his magical wand on top of him to bring him back.
Yeah.
But we shall never know. And
well, I feel like, you know, we keep calling this a filler episode, but I feel like there is stuff that could be that I feel it's likely, very likely that the stuff we're talking about is stuff that's being set up.
Maybe. I think we're projecting our wishes and desires more than anything else.
On any other show, I would agree with you on that, except that I feel like that is something we'll get to, in fact, that Doctor Who, Stephen Moffat's take on Doctor Who is the more complicated, the more tied together, the better.
Yeah, let's move on to
we should go to speculation.
Speculation. Episode had no bearing on anything whatsoever.
This episode revealed the entire plot of the show for the next 5 seasons.
So you're on the not pregnant side, well, as I'm on the pregnant side.
We're all having babies. That's the important thing. We're all having time babies that will murder people. But let's go.
That's the t-shirt, right? We're
all
having babies to murder people.
See, why else would you have a baby? This is my thought. So I think the speculation-wise, the big thing to mention is that next week's episode, as previously stated, is called The Doctor's Wife, which is a big spoiler, or which was, like, there was a fair amount of drama with releasing it, if I recall Neil Gaiman's Twitter handle correctly, Twitter postings about it correctly.
Yeah, I think, but I love Neil Gaiman, and I think maybe part of the fanfare about it is that it's Neil fucking Gaiman. Neil himself, literally, that is doing it. I mean, he could. You're talking about somebody whose body of work is just, I mean, as a writer myself, I'm like, damn, he's the man that got me thinking about how I write things and what is the act of story and so on, more than anything else.
Yes, I completely agree with you, by the way, about everything you just said about Neil Gaiman as a writer. I love his writing. I love his prose. I really respect his thoughts on writing and what it is to be a writer. I'm also going to say right now, speculation, I'm not going to like next week's episode.
And why is that? Wait, are we allowed to speculate on ourselves, by the way? Speculation. I might get donut tomorrow.
I am looking at the outline and it says speculation. Okay. The outline is telling me I'm allowed to say whatever I want.
Okay, cool.
But no, I have so much respect for Neil Gaiman as a writer. I have very little faith in him as a screenwriter. I've seen a lot of his work, a lot of his screenplay work, and for some reason, I don't know what it is.
Are we talking about Neverwhere?
No, we are talking about Neverwhere. We are talking about Stardust. We are talking about that episode of Babylon 5 he wrote.
Whoa. Okay, hold a second here. Neverwhere, I blame on production. Stardust, he did not write that.
I thought he wrote it dry. I don't know. My point is, like, I feel like there's something about Neil Gaiman's writing. This is my thought that's been accumulated over many years, is that I love Neil Gaiman as a writer, but I feel like there's something about his writing that doesn't translate well to the screen. Like, he's a novelist and a comic book writer, but as a result of that, there's a lack of immediacy. And I have no idea why this is, but it's just something that's never quite synced for me with him. And you know what? I completely acknowledge the fact that other people disagree with me on that. Like, it's just, that's a personal preference.
Draw a line down your apartment on my side is the men who stand by Neil Gaiman and God. That's
yes. I will be over in my corner reading American Gods, or one of his many collections of short stories, which I adore. I'm just saying, I also have my least favorite episode of Doctor Who of all time is The Doctor's Daughter. So an episode called The Doctor's Wife is like strike two.
Well, I'm actually wondering if they're doing a double. I'm wondering if they're doing a deception trick. You know, like they're it's called a Doctor's Wife. Everyone's thinking it's a River Song reveal of some kind, and I have a feeling it actually isn't. I have a feeling that it will introduce new information. I do not believe it'll confirm or deny anything about Miss Song.
Well, how well did you parse the trailer? Because it seemed like they were implying more Time Lords.
Yes, they are based on. On that, there's something about Time Lord signals and things like that. I've read a clip again off of Io9, or maybe it was Bleeding Cool, where there's mention on this episode taking place outside of time and space. It will be curious to see where all this stuff goes and what does it mean to be the Doctor's wife. Who knows? We shall see.
And I apologize to any Neil Gaiman fans out there. I do not. And Neil Gaiman himself. I am going into it with an open mind.
He listens to the podcast, right?
Neil Gaiman listens to everything I do because he knows that my opinion matters.
I tell myself that every morning as well.
it'll be very interesting. And I'm a sucker for Ood. So.
Oh yeah, I'm actually looking forward to Ood. I'm actually looking forward to the episode.
Yeah.
And I'll also tell you something else. I haven't seen any trailers for it. I have only seen bits and pieces. And I'm actually trying my best this season not to go spoilery and find out what's happening. So.
Oh, that's good, because that way you won't spoil me.
I was offered by someone to actually know what the hell happens in the mid-season. I'm like, no, don't tell me.
Why would you want to know that? That's
some people do. Hey, I'm actually a big fan of spoilers.
Okay.
Especially when said by Miss Song. But I'm a big fan of doing it, because it's, for me, it's about knowing, okay, if that's where you're going, let's see how you carry it out. I'm a big fan of execution. But in this case, I'm trying to bring my raw emotions to this podcast, so I'm trying not to spoil myself.
No, that's good.
I've already seen enough things. I'm like, oh man, I don't want to know how we got to this point. Let's just carry on.
Definitely. I want to stop because we got a question on the Twitters.
A question on the Twitters.
Yes. This is before we started recording this podcast. This is after we start recording this podcast. Kruftbox wants to know. Kruftbox has a question from his 12-year-old daughter Mira. Mira asks, "Is the missing girls Amy's baby and somehow a Time Lord?"
And I'm going to say yes. And she is the mother of all Time Lords
and a murderer.
Where the hell?
She's a murderer.
How do we know she was in the suit?
I'm just saying.
You're just saying.
Probably a murderer.
Your precious doctor was hurt, and now you're just calling. You're calling it as you feel it.
I'm just saying, okay, Mira.
God help me if I ever need you on a jury on my peers.
I think the show wants us to think that the girl is Amy's baby and also a Time Lord. And I think the thing that's going to be really fun to find out is if we're being tricked or not.
Yeah, that's always, and I hope we are tricked.
Yeah.
But not like just, oh no, you're wrong. It's actually, no, it's even cooler than you think, tricked.
I really hope what happens is a guy in a suit comes in and sits down on the box and is like, look, guys, I'm just going to lay it out for you and tell you what's going on. Extra points if they actually get Mark Shepard back to do that.
You know, that's actually called the Neo Genesis Evangelion ending, where they're just like, okay, we ran out of budget. We blew it all in the American episodes, so I'm just going to tell you what was supposed to happen. There was this killer explosion. The doctor jumped out. It was really awesome.
You would have really loved it.
The theme for this thing is forgiveness. See you next season. That would be the best ending ever.
Yes, especially if you actually had seen Neo Genesis Evangelion, which I have not.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the next item in our agenda, because we don't actually just ramble here, people. We have a list of things that we were supposed to talk about, is something interesting. We've been talking about how complicated the season's been, and how we're fully anticipating everything I'm fully anticipating everything connecting back on top of each other by episode 7 when this half season ends. And apparently the people in the Britons are kind of unpleased about that.
It's weird. There was already talk about, I think I mentioned it last time, there's a drop in ratings. And then there's a couple of articles that came out suggesting this is a result of kids being scared by Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. Mira obviously is not, but
Mira's a brave one.
Yes, but she's no kid at 12. but like seriously, like kids being scared of it. It's not appropriate for the darkness at 6 o'clock. And the plots themselves have become really complicated,
mm-hmm.
and dark. And there's also, and part of these complaints I actually heard even last year. Like, there was controversy over Amy throwing herself at the doctor, you know, pretty much say, you know, lying on the bed and offering herself up to him. You know, just things like that. So I kind of wanted us to talk about it to see, like, what do you think? Does it feel that it's more complicated and darker?
I definitely feel it's more. I think the complicated argument holds water because essentially, I think there is, like, kind of, you know, it's important to remember that culturally for you know, the British public, Doctor Who is what they call Saturday, is like, it's called tea time. It's tea time telly. Like, it's watched like over dinner.
It's family fun.
Yeah. It's like watched right after dinner or right before dinner or right during dinner. I can't say, but it's watched together as a family, and it's, you know, there's a ritual aspect to it, but it's not. I think that cultural attitude is more casual in its consumption. And this will be something that our number one British correspondent will have to chime in on in the comments. But my sense from, you know, my vague Anglophilia, is Anglophilia the right word? I'm not saying any of the right words today.
We'll go with it.
Whatever it means, where I like Britain a lot.
You're Anglophile.
Anglophile, yes. Anglophilia, I guess, would be accurate. It just sounded like hemophilia, which isn't right.
Where you have a lack of Englishism? Which is clearly what you're suffering from today.
It's clear. I'm suffering from a lot of lack of things today. I've been getting over a cold, people. Let's go with that excuse. But I think the thing is, like, it is, the tone is definitely changing. However, I'll say, like, you know, season one of this reboot was a complex narrative that drew upon every episode.
See, that's what drew me into it. I mean, like, yeah. When you talk about Dalek, that episode was like so dark is not even the right word for it. It's like, yeah. It had these emotional movements that were so different than a lot of what you'd find in sci-fi or expect from Doctor Who. And I think that's what worked for it.
Yeah. And like, I mean, and you have to remember, like, season one, there are two episodes in a row of torture, like, mm-hmm. and two episodes in a row where the Doctor gets tortured. And there's a lot of, I mean, I think the whole series has been very dark. I will say that, you know, murdering, you know, the Doctor getting killed at the beginning of this season, that's a bit of a game changer. And that's, you know, I think there has been one universal truth of the series has always been that the Doctor's always okay.
Yeah.
Like, the Doctor survives, the Doctor is a universal presence, and so killing him at the beginning of the season does change that.
And see, I think as a grown-up, you know that. As a grown-up, you know, like, okay, I know the Doctor's not really dead, and he is okay. The question is just, we have the fun with the mystery. I kind of wonder, as a kid, though, you're like, well, hey, the rules of the game says the Doctor regenerates, and it looks like that's what's happening, and oh my god, he got shot, and do I know what's happening?
Yeah.
I do think it's a bit scarier. I think it's a bit darker. It's all Doctor, but it's darker.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. I do think it's more complicated. I wonder if it's being written because they're trying, you know, we talked about this. It feels like they're writing this stuff to an American audience this time. Mm-hmm. And in America, we are, like, are they trying to target this kind of, you know, young to, you know, fringe middle-aged adults that we are? I'm more fringe middle-aged than you are. You're on the
outside. Can we not use the word middle-aged yet?
I don't know. I try to figure out what my sector is anymore. I don't understand. But the point is that it's being written to us. And I love the complexity in Moffat's scripts as opposed to Russell T. Davies, which is really, I mean, I love the Davies series, but I think Moffat stuff really plays with time travel, really plays with time and space, where Davies really didn't. It was just like, oh, here's some great adventures along the way and some really emotional beats to it. And I wonder if they are trying to write the show to this more mature audience at the expense of writing it to their
core family.
I'm kind of curious to see what will happen. I mean, they put a tweet out saying, oh, there's no viewership loss because most of it was made up with DVR and online web views and etc. But then I hear stuff like with Hayden Black, a kind of mutual friend of ours, who he was like, fire Moffat, and I was like, what? That's a bit extreme. But I'm curious to see. I mean, there is a big controversy brewing. Not that big, but it's brewing in England. See how that all plays out.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing I'm just going to say right now is that people complaining about Doctor Who being too scary for children are people who aren't paying attention to the history of Doctor Who, which has been terrifying children for decades.
True, and bringing it back to Neil Gaiman, he said that that's one of his earliest memories, is hiding behind a couch, fearful of the Dalek. Like, he remembers when he first saw a Dalek, and he was so...
That is a meme. That is a genuine meme in British culture, is hiding behind the sofa.
As much as people make fun of it, it's a plunger on a salt shaker and all that kind of stuff. I mean, they freaked out an entire nation with a plunger.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it comes down to.
What does it need a whisk for? But yeah, I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see if that, I think here's what's the deal is, it'll be interesting to see if that affects the writing of the show in any way, because it kind of seems like Moffat knows what kind of, that he's at this moment still in a position of power. And I think a large, you know, it also helps that Sherlock has been so successful. So even if Doctor Who did terribly in the ratings, he can still say, well, look at my shiny other thing that I did, and that's hugely successful as well.
Yeah, the man has a track record.
The man is a major get for the series, and if it'll be very interesting to see if the BBC puts any sort of smackdown.
We're gonna get the label of Moffat apologists on our show, aren't we?
I don't know. I mean, I'm still really angry about those lizard episodes. I know they're dinosaurs, and I know they're not even dinosaurs. They're Silurians.
They're not.
I just did not care for those episodes. We have a question. I feel like I'm switching things around on the agenda order.
Yeah, we did have a question.
I'm going to move the question ahead because I wanted to also talk about another show, and I figure we should not jump around when it comes to show topics.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, Weaker One, or Wecker One, one of the two, please feel free to let us know. Wanted to know who we thought would win in a fight, the Silence or the Vashta Narada. And Rudy, you go first.
Oh, I would say Vashta Narada.
I agree.
Because one is a... Like, it was always implied of Vashta Narada, as much as they had this communication ability that they developed towards the end. I mean, that was the point. They developed it towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
They were really seen as a predatory species.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas everything we've seen from the Silence, I mean, at the end of the day, they don't do anything for themselves. I mean, the great moment in that second episode was where he's like, you guys haven't developed guns. They're like, we don't need to. We have humans to carry them. It's like, great. And he shoots him. It's like, there is the Silence themselves are they're almost parasitic.
Yeah.
Whereas the Vashta...
Narada.
They are actually a threat. They are proactive in it. So I say the Vashta Narada. The real question is, if the Vashta Narada don't have eyes, do they ever not see the Silence and forget about
them? Oh man, there we go. That people is the true question. But I will say that I agree, Vashta Narada. But I think part of that is also, I don't think I mentioned this, but I never found the Silence very scary.
I found them scary in the first episode, not so much in the second. I found the first episode, they were frightened. Like, that moment where that one, like, sort of, like, not the act, like, the fact that they forget about them, not scary. And in fact, I was like, this is just funny. That scene in the back, yeah, in the washroom where she's like, oh, look, and she's on this loop, and is that Star Trek? And going back and forth. And then that one time where he suddenly, like, opens his mouth and goes, pointy finger, and just blows her away. I was like, okay, that's fucking freaky.
Yeah, the mouth.
Sorry,
the...
I just bumped this up to, like, higher than PG-13, didn't I? I just swore.
Oh, man, I missed it, too.
Damn.
Sorry, kids. I've been really good about not swearing. Sorry, Mira. Yes, that's right. You've scarred her. You've scarred her forever. And now we're down to 11 fans.
Sorry.
I think the thing that bothered me, honestly, is that, like, the Silence are such a good setup for jump scares. Like, you can, like, really, you know, like, the, you know, creeping out of the, suddenly appearing in the background, like, that sort of thing. Like, like, they could have been so much scarier. And for some reason, like, the stuff in the orphanage was... all right. There were some like genuinely creepy moments, but I think the scariest moment in both episodes was when Amy looks at her face and sees that there are hash marks all over it.
Right. There's more marks, which is funny because we're just talking about how it's become darker and scarier, and we're now saying, it's not that scary.
Well, it's not scary for us because we're not small children. Okay.
Mentally, I'm a small child.
Yes, mentally you are a small child. Okay. But that is an answer to your question, sir. I hope it has been satisfactory. And we will, I think you posted another question of similar nature, which we will hit next time. So I wanted to also mention, because, you know, in theory, we are not just going to talk about Doctor Who on this podcast. We're going to talk about all sorts of television that has television
all
and media,
television.
Really. Because we talked about Terminator last time, didn't even mention the series.
Yes.
But I will mention that I just want to shout out to anyone who watches the show Fringe, and I want to say to people who don't watch the show Fringe, why aren't you watching the show Fringe?
I can tell you why I don't watch the show Fringe.
Why don't we watch the show Fringe?
Because every time I sit down to watch an episode, I am disappointed. I watched the first episode, and I was like, this show is retarded. I was honestly just like, it felt so paint by the numbers. I did not like the chemistry of the cast. I mean, yes, Walter Bishop is hilarious, but I would rather see the
cast. Okay, so how many episodes have you seen?
I'll be honest, I've seen two. And that's because...
What was the second episode?
The second episode was involving some sort of soldier that was possessing a girl, and it had some of the most terrible acting I'd ever seen anywhere.
Yeah, here's the thing with Fringe. It's basically, over the course of the last three seasons, it has gone from being a quasi, you know, a show that definitely showed its X-Files heritage on its arm, on its sleeve. It showed its X-Files heritage on its sleeve. It's gone from that to being some of the most daring genre television on TV right now.
Daring is a strong word. And because you use that word, I will give it another chance. I promise
but
you.
But I've actually sat down at one point and broke down, like, here are the episodes from season one you need to watch in order to understand season two.
You should post that or link to that on the blog so people who don't watch it can actually... I will follow up on that, because here's the thing. As much as I don't watch it, I do follow at all things genre and with twists and turns. Yeah. And I love the parallel universe type stuff.
Yes,
that. But I just, every time I sit down and watch it, I can't bear to watch. I keep thinking, like, when is Pacey finally going to kiss Dawson? That's a double joke for people who actually know what the hell I'm talking about.
Yeah, whoops. But I think the reason I want to bring up Fringe is that, like you mentioned, the major conceit of the show has been parallel universes. And it's, I think, been really fun to see them explore and play with that. And, you know, slowly reveal what's going on with these two parallel worlds that are linked together by this one thing that happened many years in the past. And it's very cool in that regard. But what happened in this finale is that there was basically the show, ended up doing a time jump. And I'm trying to discuss this with as few spoilers as possible.
Well, you can do it if you do the spoiler voice, remember? That's the
no,
rule.
But no, I don't want to spoil you. And you have to listen to this.
Well, I'm going
to
find out anyway.
Yeah, but no, I'm just... I just want to basically say that I would love to hear from other Fringe fans who might be listening to this. If you watch both Doctor Who and Fringe, and you're clearly someone I want to talk to anyway. But I would love to hear from Fringe fans, if you can, about what you thought of the time travel that was brought into the show and how you think it might affect the upcoming season.
Time travel or time jump?
Time travel, ultimately. They're basically there is a time jump forward and then a lot of talk about sending consciousnesses back to prevent tragedies in the future from ever happening. And
I think I saw this in Eureka once.
Oh, Eureka, seriously?
Okay, you say nothing bad about that show.
We all have our things. I'm not judging.
Yes, you are. I can see it in your face.
People at home, I am not making a judgy face. He is a liar. But yes, we'll see what people want if we have time to discuss it next week, but I'll be definitely interested to know if anyone has Fringe thoughts to share.
Anyone has Fringe thoughts?
just stuff about Fringe, bangs, like, you know, talk about, we'll just talk about hair. that this is getting punny. We should probably wrap up. I wanted to say thanks to everyone who's been commenting and tweeting and all that, because it makes us feel like there's, you know, people listening to this, which makes doing it all the more fun.
That's right.
And also, we forgot to thank our wonderful composer, Aaron Raithe, last week for doing the awesome score, or the awesome theme.
I love the theme. I love.
It's so good.
It is.
It's so good. We told him, we should be really clear, we told him, do it like the Doctor Who theme, but different. And
boy, did he deliver it.
Yes. And so, yes.
I have to be honest, I just want to write a sci-fi show on my own. Just so I can have him write the theme music for it.
Yes, Aaron Raithe, available for all your music needs. If you can either ask him very, very nicely for a favor.
You've been waiting for that sci-fi wedding. Now here's your chance.
Yes, but and we can't thank the lovely Casey McKinnon for hosting us this week, but we can thank the lovely Zatanna the cat for not meowing at all.
She was a perfect little kitty.
Yeah. As she sits ignoring us and thinking about how much she likes the episode Father's Day. Anyways, thank you again for tuning in. Please feel free to email us at feedback@timeywimey.tv. Tweet us at timeywimeytv, all one word. And visit the website at timeywimey.tv. And did I leave anything out?
No, just... You can also hit us individually on Twitter at Lizlet, at Rudy. Look forward to your feedback and comments as always, everyone. Have yourself a great week. We'll see you here next time to discuss The Doctor's Wife.
Oh, I hope it's not bad.
It's Neil himself. It's going to be awesome.
We'll see.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.